This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're tuned in to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and of course, Arvin Yuvaraj.
Mm-hmm. Not DJ Arvin today,
just Arvin Yuvaraj today. Uh-huh. So, great selection of stories lined up today, from local startups to laptops, robots, viruses called Judy, and space aggressors.
Space aggressors.
Yes, trained specialist space fighters, something we'll get onto a little bit later on.
That sounds like a Saturday morning cartoon, to be honest.
Space aggressors. We could be writing theme songs and all kinds of stuff.
From the 80s, indeed.
What are you trying to say?
That it's from the good time of Saturday morning cartoons.
You keep backpedaling. Right. starting off with some good news for a local company this afternoon, Malaysian payment startup SoftSpace. They've managed to raise $5 million in its Series A funding round, and it was the Japanese e-commerce service provider Transcosmos who were the sole investors. Mm-hmm. The firms will collaborate on a customer relationship management or a CRM tool, making use of Transcosmos data analytics capabilities and SoftSpace suite of payment options.
Yeah, so, well, some features are still under development, but once completed, the CRM software will be able to deliver targeted ads and loyalty programs and let merchants employ chatbots to help handle customer complaints.
More robots.
So the chief strategy officer, Cher Leong, gives an example of how this might work. A restaurant equipped with SoftSpace's card reader and linked up with its software can accept a wide range of physical payments with cards, as well as online payments. After the payment has been made, the restaurant owner can send customers a survey and ask them to give a rating. In the case of a bad rating, the automated chat process could commence trying to find out what went wrong. The owner could send the customer a coupon or a discount. If the chatbot is not able to resolve the issue, it's transferred to a customer care person in the Transcosmos call center.
See, I don't know how I feel about that, right? So they're delivering you, this bot is basically coming on and saying, look, you had a dodgy meal. Mm-hmm. How can we sort that out for you, sir?
Yeah, that's basically what it's saying. Right,
but you want to speak to a real person, surely, straight away. I'd want to anyway.
I'd want to.
Right?
Unless the bot is so efficient that it can direct you to the proper departments. Yeah.
That would be nice. Right, SoftSpace then. They were founded back in 2012 and were one of the early players offering mobile point of sale, MPOS solutions, helping more merchants to accept cards and digital payments through its card readers and their mobile wallets. Its strongest customer bases are in Malaysia and Thailand, followed by Indonesia, and they've started expanding to Taiwan, and they're targeting Japan next.
Yeah, and SoftSpace works with banks who promote it and let their merchant networks. The startup has shipped about 180,000 card readers across Asia so far. So that's a big number.
It is.
Yeah, so Transcosmos deal, it represents SoftSpace's first institutional round of investment. Before this, it was running on angel funding and a government grant, and that can only go so far, right, when you think about it. Well, they have an explanation as to why they've stayed that way for so long.
They do, and Mr. Leong has said, well, we are profitable, and having more money doesn't make things go faster. Ooh. If only more people thought like that.
Yeah.
So in an article analysing how Asian payments startups stack up, this guy, Vladislav Solodki, who runs the fintech-focused venture capital firm Live Shredder, he praised SoftSpace for their frugality, actually. He said, the Malaysian SoftSpace has the most fanatic team of engineers. Mm. He goes on to say, out of all projects known to me, this one has the most lean team. It needed much less investment than others to reach their goals.
You know why I like this story? Because it shows a lot of patience.
Right.
And they've waited it out and they played like the long game and then they finally reached this point.
Yeah.
So it's a nice feel-good story.
It is.
Yeah, so among SoftSpace's clients are several banks in the region like Maybank, you have Bangkok Bank, the CIMB Niaga, as well as corporate clients like Air Asia as well.
Wow.
To accelerate its expansion into Japan, SoftSpace signed a memorandum of understanding with Sumitomo Mitsui Card Company at the beginning of the year. This means the startup already has a foot in the door at one of the country's largest banks. So great work. Like, big kudos to SoftSpace and their
team.
Brilliant.
Yeah, well done. I hope to hear more stories about that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Moving on. All right, remember that laptop ban we talked about just a couple of weeks ago?
Yep, and why it might not make as much sense as people think it does. Yep.
We had a big old debate about that, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Things got really scary about laptops catching fire in
the cabin.
In the cabin.
Yep.
Right. And as we know, right, modern air travel has kind of become less tolerable in many ways. I mean, let's be honest, you know, seats are narrower, legroom is a little bit more cramped, and luggage space is often non-existent.
And you also have to take off your belts every time you want to board the plane.
Sometimes your shoes, and anyway. But in one way, it has improved. You know, keeping yourself busy on a flight once meant squinting at a flickering movie screen right at the end of the cabin. Today, most flyers can travel with a library of films, music, and books on a small electronic device. You've got onboard Wi-Fi, so meaning business folks can work uninterrupted. However,
yeah, things might change, sadly. On May 28th, John Kelly, who is America's Homeland Security Secretary, said that the U.S. was considering extending a ban on large electronic devices in cabins to cover all international flights to and from the country. So currently, only passengers on planes taking off from eight mostly Muslim countries are forced to, you know, to place their laptops, tablets and the like into the hold.
Right. But to be fair, as we mentioned before, this idea is not come out of the blue, right?
Yeah.
Officials over there have kind of hinted for months that they were considering introducing such a ban. Even earlier this month, it seemed certain that restrictions on flights between Europe and America would be imposed, only for the threat to be kind of lifted following a meeting between the security officials from both sides of the pond. I think that for a second, they kind of went, hang on a minute, this might not be the best idea.
And we might need to think this through for the long-term effects.
Yeah,
yeah, but allegedly, intelligence agencies are worried that a terrorist might try to get down might try to down a commercial jet using a bomb concealed in a consumer device placed against a weak point in the cabin wall. It's a bit worrying that they are, you know, that they're being so specific about this, right? There is no indication of whether restrictions are imminent or merely under consideration. And IATA, the main international airline association, hopes that they can be averted by increasing scrutiny of cabin luggage and employing better bomb detecting technology, which, when we think about it, will mean only more delays.
Right.
Yeah, when you're trying to get on a plane. In the circumstances, IATA officials believe that passengers would be okay about the longest security lines that would result from this.
Oh, really now? Let's just have a word with the people who were waiting to board a BA flight over the last few days. I'm sure.
I mean, have you ever been to an airport where it's delayed and how annoying and frustrating it is to wait for a plane? Yeah.
I mean, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes, because there are people who, in their head, they've built up to getting on that flight at a certain time, and, you know, they've kind of got over their fears of getting onto an airplane. They're like, right, at that point, I'm getting on it. And then suddenly you take that away. It's difficult.
It messes up. And they also might have a plane to catch on the other end. They might they might need to get off on an airport and get onto another plane in about half an hour to an hour's time.
Yeah. Mm. Right. I suppose then that the airlines would no doubt prefer this too. So over 200 million passengers flew on international flights to or from America in the last 12 months to June 2016. This is according to the Department of Transport's latest figures. Mm-hmm. No one knows how many passengers would be put off by the prospect of flying device-free. Carriers, though, they, of course, worry that lucrative business travelers who rely on being productive while in the air would prove the most reluctant. I mean, that would be bad for profits.
It would be, yeah. But let's look at transatlantic flights, for example. Business and first-class passengers account for 13% of airlines' capacity, but half the revenue.
Wow.
Yeah. Even if executives were willing to forego their spreadsheets for detective novels, they are often forbidden to put company computers in the hole for fear of theft or loss of sensitive information, which makes sense because I wouldn't want to check in. I don't know how much sensitive information I have on my laptop, but I wouldn't want to check it in.
For sure.
Yeah, it's because it's so important to my daily work.
Right.
Yeah, which, I mean, all this could mean that a monthly trip to London might become a once a quarter one.
Right.
Yeah, so no doubt some of the airlines would probably seek ways around a ban, like Qatar Airways, for example, has been lending business class passengers laptops during flights since the restrictions on Middle Eastern flights were introduced. Perhaps the best hope is that in time, executives will learn to live with this ban just as they have with the 11-year-old one on liquids.
Mm.
Yeah, perhaps. But mouthwash, you know, isn't as crucial to productivity as a laptop, right?
I suppose that depends on what industry you're in, right?
Mm.
Anyway, it's time for us to take a very small breather. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes after these messages. The song we've got coming up next is the Get Up Kids with a track called Red Letter Day. When we come back, we'll be hearing a story about robots pretending to be human or humans to be pretending to be robots.
Ooh.
Not quite sure. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and Arvind Uvaraj. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Barcelona, Fiorentina, Manchester United. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes with me, Rich, and Arvin. Now, we're always talking about artificial things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like robots and chatbots and, I don't know, soon enough it'll be artificial roses and one thing or another, you know. But with artificial intelligence and robots advancing so much in the last few years, it's getting harder and harder to determine what's human and what's not. Mm-hmm. That's what scientists, or why scientists, have created an earpiece that may give you a literal chill down your spine if the person you're speaking to is an AI impersonating a human.
Yeah, so it's...
This sounds insane.
It does, because it's actually called the anti-AI AI.
What the heck?
Yeah, and it's one like a Bluetooth headset, and it uses a set of algorithms to warn you if the voice that you're listening to isn't human. And basically, the algorithms are similar to the ones that allow a computer to sound human in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
It's basically it's in a sense it takes one to know one.
Right.
Sort of thing, you know. So when the device detects synthesized vocal patterns, a small thermoelectric plate will alert you with a cold sensation on the back of your neck. See, this is just cruel, because there could be a ton of ways that they could have done this. It could have been a small buzz. It could have been a beep.
But no, they choose to shock you.
Yeah, to shock you by sending like a cold thing. Have you ever, has someone with cold fingers ever tapped you on the neck?
Of course.
You know what kind of a jolt that is?
Yeah, that's
exactly what this device does.
I'm just trying to think, these scientists who are going to go and see Stephen Hawking, speak about, that would be awful for them. They're just constantly jolting all the way through
and jumping in their seats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So DT, they are a research agency in Australia. They've created the technology as a proof of concept in just 5 days. And beyond distinguishing AI from humans, the company emphasizes that the earpiece could help separate real and fake news.
Oh, here we go.
To demonstrate how it works, DT... included a video in the post that used the technology on a video of Donald Trump and an AI-generated voice that sounded like him. The device correctly identified the real Donald Trump as human and the recording as robot. I don't know if that's a success or not.
Yeah, because it depends on what voice they use.
Right.
Yeah. So the company also wrote that the device is a work in progress and likely has a long way to go. I'm just hoping it becomes available before like an army of human-looking robots tricks us into becoming their slaves or something, because you know that's coming. You know that's going to happen. I mean, we wouldn't be able to do much if that happens, but at least we'll know what's going on.
Either that, or we'll be shocked into submission and not be able to do anything.
Yeah, but at least we'll know that the person who's making a submit is a robot.
Absolutely.
It makes it easier to differentiate.
I mean, I'm wondering if it'll accidentally classify somebody as a robot if they're just mechanical by default, Everybody knows a real person who behaves like a robot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're going to get some music and some messages in, and when we come back, we'll be talking about Judy and why you need to be very, very afraid of her. Or it. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Blues, folk, metal. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich, and Arvin. So we've got some electrifying stories for you, of course, today. Up first, though, it's if you are an Android smartphone user, you might want to pay close attention to our next story. So, security experts have warned that as many as 36.5 million Android users, Jeff Sandu, if you're listening. Oh, in fact, Arvin, you are
an Android user. Oh, yeah.
36.5 million Android users may have been infected by advertising fraud malware that could have been lurking in Google Play Store for years. So this malware is dubbed Judy. And it was found in 41 apps in the store and made by a Korean publisher, Ennis Studio. And what the bug does is it force clicks an ad on an infected phone, and it creates a bit of a nuisance for users whilst generating gamed revenue for advertisers.
Yeah, it sounds super annoying just from the gist of it. And if you're worried about the apps on your smartphone right now, don't fret, because Google has now pulled all the infected apps off the Play Store. The discovery and the extent of the outbreak, however, has cast serious doubt on the efficiency of the Chocolate Factory's anti-malware checking system, which is called Bouncer, which is Google Play protection service.
Right. So how this Judy terror, let's call it that, here is pretty simple. It silently registers receivers which establish a connection with the CNC server.
Mm-hmm.
So this server replies with the actual malicious payload, which then includes this JavaScript code, a user agent string, and URLs controlled by the malware author. The malware opens the URLs using the user agent that imitates a PC browser in a hidden web page and receives a redirection to another website. The malware then spams out adverts to the infected handset, some of which have to be clicked on by the user to get the home screen functional again. This drives revenue to the malware operator due to all the ad clicks. Okay, I take it back. That wasn't so simple,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, it sounds pretty complicated. And the thing that this news comes barely a month after a similar malware infestation in the Play Store was discovered in 49 rogue apps.
Wow.
That's a big number. Once again, the malware was able to evade Google's checking systems by using the two-stage attack vector. Insert a seemingly innocent app and then that can pull in a payload later on.
So this Judy case, it also highlights the importance of checking information on apps before you download them, folks. While many of the infected pieces of software had good ratings from users, at least four or five in some places, there were also clues in the user comments section about the enormous number of advertisements the apps were generating. Do check if you're going to download something.
Yeah,
you know.
I'll check reviews. See, this is my issue. I mean, I'm an Android user. I think I'll always be an Android user because I'm super comfortable with it. But I always check reviews and download numbers. And even then, I don't trust apps that I haven't heard about.
Right. And it's like you say, when I'm looking at the reviews of stuff, I will look through and figure out how many, I think, of those reviews are actual real reviews.
Yeah, and a lot of them are not.
Of course.
You can tell. I mean, you can tell by the way they write.
Yeah.
A lot of them sound the same and come from the same place.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are like red flags.
Right.
Yeah. So this will really bug Google, I guess, because the company has made much of the safety of the Play Store in recent years after a rocky start that saw its online marketplace prove to be a lot less safe than Apple's shopfront, which I hate to admit, you know, but it's true. So based on recent history, the Play Store may be gaining its old reputation back.
Right. One last break then before our big story of the day.
Yeah.
It's out of this world. It's about aliens and it's about the fate of the human race.
It is.
Or America's, at least. And to get into that space groove, we'll play a spacey song, I think, after the story. First up, I've got some catfish and some bottle men. Mm-hmm. We'll do that first. That's coming up. This is Kathleen on BFM 89.9.
I have a dream.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Like Goldilocks, keeping your bed warm, we promised you a story that's out of this world. And since we like to keep our promises, our next story is about a special combat division that are going to train U.S. forces for, wait for it, extraterrestrial conflict.
Yep.
In other words, they're gearing up for an alien invasion. And if you're a fan of good sci-fi B-movies, you know that any alien fighting squad needs an over-the-top name, which is why these guys are called, Arvin, please take it away,
the Space Aggressors.
Right.
It's like I said, it's like an 80s cartoon. It's like you turn on the TV on Saturday morning,
right,
and this starts, and then the logo shows up, like,
right.
Swing.
Right. Oh, God, yeah. Swinging forward towards the screen. Yeah, I can see it already.
Yep.
Right.
Just pasted there. Then the title of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this is a fascinating story, to be honest, because especially if you check out what these guys are hired to do, their job is basically to act like the enemy during mock space battles to help U.S. units prepare for a conflict that may one day extend into the cosmos.
Ah, we have to read between the lines, don't we, a little
bit? Yeah, we do.
Right. According to Captain Christopher Barnes, Chris to his friends, he's the chief of training for the 26th Space Aggressor Squadron. My word. And he says, we play the bad guys. Our job is not only to understand the different types of threat and potential enemies, but also to be able to portray them and replicate them for the good guys, our Air Force. Now, the 26th and 527th Space Aggressor Squadrons are headquartered in a two-story warehouse at Colorado's Shriver Air Force Base, stocked with advanced radio and satellite equipment and nicknamed the Barn.
The Barn, I like that.
Right, this is all behind the building, and there are antenna dishes that trace the sky. Just going back, able to portray them and replicate them.
Mm-hmm.
How do they know what they look like?
That's exactly what I was thinking. And
right.
Then I put my tinfoil hat on.
Okay,
and
just
then
for
I
a
went
moment.
To Area 51.
Yeah.
I'm like, they've seen them before.
Right.
Little bug creatures that run around or go into farmers' bodies and
right.
you have people in shades
with
memory erasers showing up. So I guess they know. They should be able to copy someone,
We've got to take this with a pinch of salt, of course, surely.
Yeah, so now I know this sounds like one big cosplay convention or like a reenactment of the Civil War. I mean, the actual actual historical Civil War. Not the one with Iron Man and Captain America.
That was real, though. No, it wasn't, was it? No.
It was. It happened in the airport last year.
Oh, yeah.
So, but these guys take themselves very seriously. While attacks by the space aggressors are simulated, senior U.S. military and intelligence officials warn that the threat in space is very real. America relies heavily on space assets to protect force around the globe, from launching missiles to directing warships across the seas. The Global Positioning System, or GPS as we know it, is actually a group of 31 high-orbiting satellites owned by the U.S. government and operated by the U.S. Air Force.
Right. So the logic behind this is then some experts are worried that disrupting America's vast network of satellites and ground-based systems could send U.S. forces back to an outdated era of targeting, communications, and navigation systems, which would deeply undercut their battlefield advantage and superiority.
Yeah, so now here's where the real interesting nuggets of information start to seep in, right? This spring, sentiments from U.S. military officials about the need to bolster American defensive position and even offensive capabilities in space has leveled up because of the concern that Russia and China are rapidly developing anti-satellite weapons. The keywords here are, of course, Russia and China. Vice Admiral Charles Richard, Deputy Commander of U.S. Strategic Command, told a conference in Washington, D.C. in March. He says, while we're not at war in space, I don't think we could say we're exactly at peace either. We must prepare for a conflict that extends into space.
He just wants there to be something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I did say earlier on, you know, we need to read between the lines, but clearly this guy's not reading between any lines. He's putting it right up there, you know, front and center.
Front and center, yeah.
We have to worry about Russia and China in space. Aren't the Chinese about to, they've just landed, they had a probe land on the moon not too recently. Very recently.
Didn't we cover it?
Yeah, last week, was it?
Yep.
Anyway, so we know there are two separate scenarios. At the top of the story, it sounded as if these space aggressors are preparing to fight off a threat from space, as in from outer space, as in aliens.
That's what I first thought.
Right. That's what it sounded like anyway. But I think the term extraterrestrial here just means from above Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically training to handle a threat that comes from the sky over a large area of land, or if there's something in space that can be weaponized.
Yeah, so the logic behind the space aggressors is that you have to ask yourself why we have adversaries that are building weapons in space, weapons that can deploy into space, weapons that can jam our satellites, weapons that can jam GPS, basically. Why are they building that entire infrastructure? It is not because they are interested in the peaceful use of outer space. It is because they are looking to threaten the United States. That's the stand that they're taking when they look at the developments and advancements that other countries are making.
Right. Or if you looked at it from another point of view, you know, it's kind of stopping the Americans from getting the upper hand and just making sure that everybody's on a level playing field.
I guess it depends on perspective.
Anyway, one tactic space aggressors are known to employ is called brute force jamming.
I like that also.
It would probably be brute force jamming. that involves
like a video game,
of course.
Yeah,
that involves sending powerful signals over satellite networks to gobble the original message. But most of their other tactics are, of course, secret at this point.
Yeah, there's also the scenario if the U.S. doesn't have access to space, because that's a very real scenario according to them. So 6 years ago, the Air Force held a study called A Day Without Space at the Nellis Air Force Base in southern Nevada that sought to replicate what would happen if American forces were deprived of satellite communications and global positioning data.
Right, and the consensus was not good, was it?
It was not good, no.
They found that the U.S. forces were not ready to handle something like that. And so after the study, the military relearned techniques for fighting without access to GPS or satellites using alternative tools like inertial navigation systems, which don't need orbiting reference points, and even compasses and maps.
Yeah,
I mean,
this reminds me a lot of Rambo. Right. I don't know how much is it. You know, when he goes into the jungle, he doesn't have any high-tech equipment, so he needs to rely on himself.
Yeah.
Bows and arrows.
Of course, looking up at the sun, knowing where it sets.
Yep. Yeah, very cool if you think about it.
Yeah,
so the Department of Defense has spent at least $22 billion in recent years to defend and improve the resiliency of our assets in space and put potential adversary space systems at risk. In April, the Air Force announced that it would create a new position for a 3-star general to serve as advisor to the Air Force Secretary and Joint Chiefs of Staff on space issues, effectively a space war czar. So I'm thinking, you don't need to do all of this.
Okay.
Everyone knows what you need to defeat aliens, right?
Right.
You need Bill Pullman
yep.
from Independence Day.
You do.
You need to appoint him as your next president.
Yeah.
He needs to give a riveting speech.
Of course.
You know, and that's
rousing speech
yeah,
that rousing everybody
speech,
gets behind.
Everybody gets behind. That's the first thing.
Right.
Second thing you need is an awesome mix cassette just to get you through the fight. Yeah, you need like a good cassette and a Walkman and a Sigourney Weaver.
You've definitely done your research on this,
Sigourney Weaver, everyone knows when an alien is here, blow it out of the airlock
right.
and you're safe.
Did you know, little fact for you going back to that story about Sigourney Weaver, that when the script was wrote for Aliens, the script didn't actually say whether or not it was going to be a man or a woman in her role, and it wasn't until she came and auditioned for it that he said, that's the woman.
Because when Sigourney Weaver shows up, you don't not say that's your woman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So after the space saw, the military also announced a new initiative aimed at deepening defense partnership in space with the U.S. allies, known as the Multinational Space Collaboration Effort. They don't make these things simple, do they?
Yeah, no.
The new measure will explore methods for increased sharing, cooperation, and collaboration to preserve the safety of spaceflight and enhance mutual security.
Yeah. One more thing I forgot, oxygen. Any space movie you see, once they come out of their ships, they just die of oxygen.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Meanwhile, back in Colorado, the space aggressors continue to wage simulated space wars to help U.S. troops prepare for a real one.
Awesome. That was a great story.
It was.
Right. On that note, we've come to the end of our midweek episode. Listen, if you missed any of today's stories, just head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play and download the BFM app, which, by the way, is Malaysia's first radio app to be available on Apple's CarPlay as well. We'll also like to briefly run down today's stories at the end of every show, so let's do that before we sign off.
Yeah, so we started off the episode with some really good news about Malaysian payment startup SoftSpace, which has raised $5 million in its Series A funding round, and it was the Japanese e-commerce service provider Transcosmos, yeah, I'm saying that right, who were the sole investors. The firms will collaborate on a customer relationship management or CRM tool, making use of Transcosmos' data analytics capabilities and SoftSpace's suite of payment options.
Then we moved on to the story about how the laptop ban on US-bound flights has resurfaced. On May the 28th, John Kelly, America's Homeland Security Secretary, said that the US was considering extending a ban on large electronic devices in cabins to cover all international flights to and from the country.
Mm-hmm. And then we had that chilling story on a device called an anti-AI that can tell you if the voice you're hearing is a robot or human.
That's so good.
It's basically like a Bluetooth earpiece that gives you a chill down your neck when it detects that the voice on the other end of a conversation is coming from AI or robot. It's bad enough that you're nervous already that you're talking to this thing, and then you get an actual chill down your spine.
For our fourth story, we spoke about a virus called Judy. The malware dubbed Judy was found in 41 apps in the store, all made by Korean publisher AnyStudio. And what the bug does is it force clicks ads on an infected phone. It creates a nuisance for users while generating gamed revenue for advertisers. And if you're worried about the apps on your smartphone right now, don't fret. Google has pulled all the infected apps off the Play Store.
Mm-hmm. And finally was our story on the space aggressors. It's basically a special training division that will train U.S. forces to combat an extraterrestrial attack. I know this sounds like they're about to fight aliens, but they're more interested in combating weaponized technology that's being used from space, from rival countries. So basically any danger from the sky, these guys would want to be able to be prepared for enough to tackle.
Right. Great stories. Next up then, it's the Breakfast Grill replay. The morning runs at Tan Chung Han. Spoke to Rafiq Razali this morning. He's the CEO of Media Prima Digital, which recently made headlines for its acquisition of Rev Asia. The deal, said to be worth 105 million ringgit, will combine traditional media with contemporary platforms and expand Media Prima's reach to around 10.4 million monthly visitors. All this part of Media Prima's digital expansion plan. What else are they looking at? Get the details on the Breakfast Grill replay happening right after the 1 p.m. news.
Yep, and that's a wrap. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for a tech-centric edition of Biz Bytes right after the news at noon. For Rich Bradbury, this is Arvind Yuvaraj. Stick around for After the Grill for 30 minutes of non-stop music with maybe, you know, a break or two in the middle. This has been Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.